Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the world. You're welcome to Revolution Live, and I'm going to give you a bit of a clue as to where I am, because I'm not in the usual shed, office, posh shed in the garden in England. I'm somewhere else. So if you're watching and you're thinking, where's he speaking from today? Here's a clue. It's one of those and one of those. So there you are. Well, that's the Rubik's Cube. I guess you would have known that. And of course, that's a pen, a biro. So here in Hungary, that's the home of the inventor of the Rubik's Cube and the inventor of the biro. So I'm by the side of the River Danube. Here in Budapest, I've been doing something else for a while, but I would never miss a Revolution Live event and never miss speaking to someone interesting, clever, and heavily involved in electric vehicle charging than Nicholas Enqvist. So, Nicholas, you're speaking to us up there in Finland. How are you today? And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. Nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation. And yeah, I'm good. We still have some winter weather here, actually, with some snow outside. But we are looking forward to spring. Yeah,
well, aren't we all, for lots of reasons. So that's good. So let me just tell everybody watching who you are and where you're from. So you're the business development director of U2. I got very excited, if I'm honest, Nicholas, for a moment, because I thought you were going to have U2 on the show, and I was going to be speaking to Bono or The Edge or one of those people. But you're not a disappointment, because I'm always keen to learn and share that learning, as we do here on Revolution Live, with our friends about all the challenges around electric vehicle charging. So the title of this gathering, of our conversation, is going to be How to Optimize EV Charging Installations for Challenging Locations. And before we get into all of that, what I'm really intrigued about is that your company, obviously not yourself, Nicholas, has been around for over 100 years, but it's only kind of pretty recently that you've come into the arena of EV charging. So can you just give us a little flavor of the company and how you've now arrived at this point?
Yeah, you're right that, first of all, that we are a 100 years old company, and we are still actually a family company with the fourth generation running the company. And during the years, we have done different kind of businesses. We have even in consumer business, selling white goods and being in retailing, for instance. But among the years and the latest decades, we have gone into more into B2B business, and we are selling electrical components. And we also have an own factory where we manufacture, for instance, distribution electrical circuit boards and substation transformers and such products. And as you mentioned, we have sort of just entered quite recently the EV charging. But of course, the whole business is, relatively speaking, quite young compared to our age of the company. So we have been in more like in standalone EV charging solutions, and we have been looking on the business in different years. I haven't been around for more than 4 years myself, but some 2.5 years ago, we thought and noted that the EV, EV cars are starting to evolve and the market starts to boom in Finland. And that was the time when we decided to enter the EV charging business as such, where we are now.
Very wise move. Very good decision. I've been spending certainly the last few weeks in and around a few locations where the two key components now of making the revolution happen are batteries and charging infrastructure. And without a doubt, people now who are coming into this market, whether they're long established, whether they know, whether they've been part of something for a long time, or they're new to it, is everybody's welcome. We need all the help we can get. It's basically all hands on deck. So we have this wonderful event, which I know you're familiar with. You've listened to a few of the Revolution Live events. We start off, which I'm about to do, with the answers to a poll question that we put out on LinkedIn. We get people from all over the place. So we've got at the moment people from even Mexico. Look at that. Mexico, Manchester, you know, all over the place. But let's crack on with a poll question. The poll question we asked, Nicholas, was what is the most important factor to ensure the reliable performance of EV charging stations in challenging locations? We gave people four options. Well, three kind of, but four essentially. 4% of people said other. So I'm not sure what that was. It was an option. They chose it. 13% of people said data analytics and monitoring. Definitely, you know, pretty important things. But a third of the audience said high quality equipment. You'll be pleased to hear that, I'm sure, given what you do. Of course, you know, the quality of most things in terms of infrastructure is predicated on it being, you know, good stuff, you know, that works, that doesn't fail. But the majority of people, just over the majority, 52%, said it's really about installation and maintenance. And I think as an EV driver myself for many years, certainly the maintenance side of that is particularly crucial, because if there's one thing that's very, very annoying with, you know, pitching up to an EV charger proposition, is when it doesn't work. Of course it is, because, you know, it's a, it's a wasted journey and you might then have a bit of a challenge. So listen, I'd like to learn, we'd like to learn a lot from you, but can I kind of start with this general question, you know, in terms of, how can I put it, the sort of absolute key factors to that you've got to consider when you're creating, and the key word is reliable charging solutions, regardless of the conditions that you're in. That's essentially what we'd like to learn going through all of these questions. So sort of don't answer that as a question of such, because we'd like to, you know, get into the general stuff. By the way, just to keep you in the picture, we've got somebody now from New York City, from the US, from Nairobi. So, yeah, we this is the great thing about the show. The time that we put it on, I think, works well in a lot of locations, maybe not everywhere, but we do get a nice international audience. But let's start with some of the kind of EV installation charging stuff, the sort of meat on the bones. Besides the hardware, then, EV charging stations have a, you know, a lot more to offer than when they're connected. What about digital solutions? You know, what are the main flavors, if you like, if I can put it like that? I mean, and for example, I'm going to make a confession, Nicholas. What is OCPP? I don't know. It's a protocol, isn't it? But what is it exactly?
Yeah. Well, actually, if I'm walking, stepping back a little bit, also referring to our history, what, for instance, Otto has been doing before, and this is probably quite typical for companies like us who are in the electrification field. We have been mainly working with hardware until now. So we have sold mechanical components and products that have been installed into buildings, which are distributing electricity. And you can, of course, switch on the lights and so on. And now we are in a very big transformation in the electrification business as well, that we are moving towards, maybe you should call it IoT, or like digitalization, in the perspective that, that more and more of the solutions are somehow software related. And of course, this is a much bigger step for us to now to enter the EV charging systems because of the digitalization. So we don't just sell the hardware anymore, but we have to sell a solution. And that solution is very much connected to software. And you asked about OCPP. So this is the communication protocol between the EV charger and the software side, which is practically in the cloud nowadays. So you have a cloud server and the EV charger is speaking, communicating with the charging cloud. And once your charger is connected, it's basically partly a computer, which is connected to the cloud, to the charging management software. Then you can actually develop the solution via software. So of course, the basic solutions that are then used nowadays is like load management, that you can control the amount of current that you use in the charging, depending on the site and time of the day and so on. And then the other one, which is very much related to the basics, is the user identification and the question how to invoice, maybe, if you want to invoice for the usage of the charging station and the electricity. That's possible with the software solutions. But
very good.
Of course, on the other hand, just to extend it further, then there are a lot of added value services that can be built on the software side, like that different service providers, like, let's say, hotels or supermarkets to want to integrate this service into their apps that they are giving to their customers and so on. So they can be extended to different directions, or even that you want to pay your parking with the same app and so on. So it's a very wide area that has generated.
Yeah, and that's good. And I think the added value, added service is all very welcome. But what I would definitely have in my mind, again, as an EV driver, is that none of those get in the way of the reliability of the actual charging moment. You know, principally, the job that you want is to be charged at, you know, whatever rate you're going to get charged at in terms of speed of charge and, of course, cost and whatever. So it's nice to have additional services, but I would always have in my mind, good, as long as they don't compromise the basic thing you're there for, which is to charge up your EV. Now, you mentioned in the intro, you're in Finland and it's snowing. Did you say it's snowing outside right now, Nicholas?
Not now, but we just got some 15 centimeters on Monday here. So,
yeah. But you're in the Nordics, so it's cold because that's the part of the world, you know. Just like Norway, which is the kind of one of the most successful electric vehicle countries in the world. I know you're very proud of Finland, and I know there's a lot of competition between Finland and Norway and Sweden. But, you know, how do extreme weather conditions impact, you know, the reliability of EV charging? Because obviously it impacts the battery. Current batteries that have liquid electrolytes are susceptible to the cold, well, and the heat, actually. But what special techniques or technology or learning have you got to cope with extreme sub-zero cold when it comes to charging?
Yeah, well, let me put it like this, that when we started to look on our alternatives, how to enter the EV charging business, we were very keen to learn, first of all, on the hardware side in the EV charging solutions available on the market, that they were designed with, the question was whether they were designed for cold climate or not. And that is going down on the component level of the products, that you have to have components in the products that can withstand, you know, very cold weather. And that, then we are talking about minus 30 degrees and even down to minus 50. And there is a clear difference between different products, how they have been designed in the first place. And so that means that you have the product that can withstand the cold, and you don't have to take any extraordinary measures like heat up the components, you know, with a mechanical heater or something, which is not very sustainable. So that's kind of one thing. And then, of course, the whole installation side is quite different in our conditions compared to, let's say, Central Europe. So that has been an area where we have had to work a lot.
Yeah, well, I can well imagine. Minus 30, minus 50, ouch. That actually sounds painful, but I know from experience in the past, I've been to, forgive me, it wasn't Finland, but I've been to northern Sweden, to Luleå, and I think it was like minus 20 there. But because it's a dry cold, it's not a damp cold, it's a very different sensation when you get to that sort of temperature, and it's not the kind of cold and damp we get in the UK typically, or in many other countries around the world, etc. Yeah, let's just come on again to some of the reality and challenge of that then in regard to, you know, sub-zero temperatures. What about cabling? What about the connection protocol? What about holding and handling some of the material when you're plugging something in? What sort of special considerations have you got to have on that? Because surely when things are, you know, seriously sub-zero, there's a real danger if you hold something, particularly metal, that something bad could happen.
Yeah. I think there has been some aspects that we have had to consider a lot. And one is just the basic physical installation. How do you make the installation so that it can withstand cold? And what I mean with cold in this case is that when you have a long period of frost, like for several months, then the ground starts to freeze and it freezes down to a certain depth. And that means that the way how you build the foundation to a charging station has to be much more solid and rigid compared to Central Europe, for instance, where you don't have this kind of freezing. So we did actually design our own solutions, how to install the EV charging station. So we are basically, as an example, we might, for a standard AC charging station, which is on a company parking place, we might put down an 85 kilos concrete block where we install the pole. And the pole as such is much more rigid, and it has a very thick layer of metal to make it withstand all kinds of possible mechanical pressures. One example is that you have to, you know, move the snow by tractors on the yard, and you have to consider, you know, that there is a snow pressure or even a tractor which might hit the pole, and you don't want it to fall down immediately. So that's really one thing. And luckily enough, our company, since we are working with metal a lot, we have our own mechanical designers. So they have been able to quite easily design our own accessories that we use, which are taking this kind of special requirements into consideration. And you mentioned the cabling. So cabling is usually, the quality of cables is a little bit different here as well. So they are more frost resistant, which means that you can work with the cables in lower temperatures. But to be honest, the first quarter of a year, like this year, is very quiet compared to the rest of the year because, you know, it's not so pleasant to work outdoors and try to dig a frozen ground. So a lot of the actual installation work will take place once the spring is here and the guys get going. You know, they can work much more conveniently with the ground.
Yeah, no, I can understand the reality of that. But that's a challenge, isn't it? Because obviously that limits the amount of time you've got to do these things. And with, you know, the accelerating adoption of electric vehicles, I I guess that's a bit of a challenge. So look, I don't want to just talk and only about the weather and the climate and all of that challenge, but, you know, because obviously, you know, ton of other stuff. What about other geographic challenges, location challenges, if you like? Because one thing, I was really looking forward to this chat with you, because it seems to me that if you can overcome some of these extreme challenges and find solutions to manage a lot of it, if you can do it there, you can do it anywhere, is I suppose what I mean. So what about other challenges? Because one of the big issues that we all hear about electric vehicles is the rural side of things, outside of towns and cities, in remote locations. Are there any experiences that you're, or knowledge that you're learning that you can help with us in that regard? You know, location challenges.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think like the basic principle of having access, for instance, to electricity is actually really good in Finland, that the grid connections are very strong here. And maybe that's because there are more than 1 million saunas, for instance, in the country. So the basic installation of bringing, you know, power to a one family house or to a site is much more robust than in many other parts of the world. So yeah. I wouldn't say that this kind of remoteness is a challenge for us as such. But we have some other special features which has affected the way how we build the business. And one is, for instance, the fact that we in Finland, Sweden, Norway had already an infrastructure for car engine heating. So there are more than 1 million heating boxes installed in the country. And they have been installed on a 60 millimeter pole, for instance. So there is a kind of an infrastructure which is semi-ready for modification to EV charging. It doesn't happen always. The problem is that if you use a car heater, the power is much smaller than when you're charging an EV and the time is much shorter. But you have still some possibilities to utilize this infrastructure as well. So for that purpose, we have also developed solutions for projects where they don't want to make a complete rebuild of the cabling on the yard.
Right.
So that's quite specific. And that also has meant that the chargers which we buy are not necessarily adapted to this environment. So again, our mechanical designer have had some special job to find some accessories how we can fit into this already existing infrastructure. Yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah, it certainly sounds interesting and challenging. Now, here's a thought. Given that the Nordics in general, and I'll tell you what, I'll mention Norway one more time, then I won't mention it again. particularly Norway, I've seen a massive uptake of electric vehicles. But in other parts of the world, particularly where you've got a challenging environment, particularly sub-zero, so I'm thinking maybe of a big country like Canada, for example, that hasn't really gone on the electric vehicle journey yet in any big way. Are you looking for, is your company now looking at the global opportunity, or is it just European focused at the moment, just out of interest?
We are focusing on Northern Europe, so we are present in Baltics and in Finland and Norway at the moment.
Yeah,
this is our region for the time being. And since we are a reseller of EV chargers, we are not a manufacturer at the moment. We are not really looking for a global business as such.
No,
so
understand.
It's more like a local and a regional business model that we have.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fine. Because I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it's a family business, isn't it? Is it still a family business from the foundation all those years ago?
Yeah, it's a fourth generation family business. However, the family is not operational in the company. They are managing the ownership through the board. And yeah, that's really good. But we still have a lot of the spirit of a family company. So I really like it myself, at least working here in the company.
Yeah. I like that too.
There's nothing wrong in talking about the Norwegians or joking about them, because my mother tongue is Swedish. So I have been doing a lot of business in the Nordics. So it's my second language, more or less.
Yeah. Very good. Very, very good. Listen, I should have done this at the beginning, so I apologize to the audience. Any questions anybody's got? So we've got Nicole from Nairobi. We've got Damien from Florida, United States. We've got Jose Marie Jimenez from Mexico, etc. Anybody who has a question that they'd like to put in there, please feel free. In about 10 minutes, I'd like to come to those questions and go through them, and that would be great. But thinking about some of what you've already shared with us, Nicholas, can you give us a kind of, if you like, a case study, something that you have actually done with a client, you know, in a challenging location, you know, where you installed an EV charging station and what sort of challenges you faced during that installation. Can you, I don't know if you're allowed to mention a client name or, but if you could just give us a little scenario or a real story, that would be nice if that's possible, please.
Yeah. And of course, there are different kinds of, let's say, challenges and scenarios. So maybe one thing is actually the concept of how you sell the idea to a customer, you know, what they should choose in terms of EV charging. And the other one is a physical, you know, how did you actually resolve the physical installation? Do you mean someone, the other one of these two or both, actually, with your question?
Well, kind of both, really, because I think everybody is always keen to say, okay, this guy's talking about a theory, a principle, you know, whatever. But what have you actually done? Give us an example of what you did and how it all kind of worked out. I mean, obviously you can't tell the whole story in a few minutes, but just the kind of flavor of it.
Yeah. Well, I think like one example is the 60 millimeter poles that I mentioned sometimes there are really projects where a customer really doesn't want to rebuild the infrastructure. And then you really have to consider, you know, like, what should we do in terms of the physical installation? And this, we sell a charging station, which is very much optimized to 76 millimeter. So you have a difference. And we actually did create a solution to that one by adding a new pole on top of the old one with some special fixings that resolve the problem. And actually, it looks like a completely new installation on the outside, even though in terms of the technical solution, it's very, very unconventional. And I think it's really a question of really trying to understand what is the the use case, what is the need of the customer, and how can you resolve it in a meaningful way without having to considering also what is the need and what they really want to do. And I think like when it comes to these kind of other similar cases, one which is quite difficult quite often is like an old parking hall. This is very typical that you have maybe a 20-year-old parking hall where you have a lot of corners that you have to go around and so on. And then the question is, you know, if you want to build something, I think it's called bus bars, that you create a distribution network of bus bars to really provide electricity for 200 cars. There actually, if you have a good charging station solution, you have maybe like the RCBOs integrated in the station, you are able to use such products as these flat cables, which are nowadays on the market. And you can go around corners in a very flexible way and distribute the electricity without having to work too much on every corner and every detail in the installation. And these are very much related to the actual hardware side, what kind of solution you have at your hand.
Right. Nicholas, I used to be able to go around corners in a very flexible way when I was a lot younger, but it doesn't work so well now.
Yeah.
Now, listen, we all know, I think probably everybody in this call knows, the two places, of course, three places where people will charge an electric car is at home. Mm. If that can happen, that's the best case scenario. Charging it in a public with a charge point operator somewhere publicly or at work. So can we just talk through the workplace charging proposition then? Mm. You know, if you're planning and designing EV charging infrastructure for your workplace, imagine I've got a company and I come to you, Nicholas, and I say, look, I want to offer some convenience for my employees. I want to maybe consider where this might work with energy management. Maybe I've got solar or something else. What is it I'd need to start thinking about? How would you help me start to consider that, you know, cost, time to do it, etc.? Maybe that's a big question, but, you know, I'm trying to imagine myself running a big business.
Yeah. I think there's one quite typical case that we are popping into in this kind of cases is that customers are coming to us and they say that we just need a low cost solution. We just need the socket outlet for the employees that they can charge their cars, and don't talk about charging management software or anything. We have our own, even that we have our own power plant on our site. We don't need, and we don't have any issues with electricity. So this would be like the situation that we just want to have a bulk solution. And I think what we have been in that kind of case is discussing very kind of seriously is that instead of going for the cheapest solution, that it would be very wise to consider the future proofness of the solution, that you actually think about the total cost of ownership when you make these kind of decisions. And one example is that At the moment, companies are allowed to offer tax-free charging for the personnel on their EV cars. So you don't have to pay any tax on the benefit that you get from your company. So typically, I mean, if you get company, if you have access to EV charging at your work, you don't pay anything for it, then everyone is charging at workplace. So at the moment, this is not an issue. So if you just have the socket outlet as a company, you can just offer it to the employees and no problem. But what happens in maybe say 2 or 3 years time when the taxation authorities decides that, this will become a fringe benefit. You have to, invoice something from the personnel. Then some companies have thought that, let's take like a fixed fee, 20 euros per month, and that will resolve the issue. And this is, in my view, not the right way to approach this question, because it's not really fair, because one person is driving 200 kilometers per day and the other one is driving only 20 kilometers per day. So how would it make, it wouldn't make sense that both of them would like to pay the same amount for the charging.
Yeah.
So in that sense, what we are really trying to explain to the companies is that you should have a future-proof solution. Of course, you have to consider that you have enough current available, and how do you manage the current if you, once the amount of stations is increasing, then you have to have some way to manage the load so that you can do some load balancing on site, that you don't have to get the biggest grid connection in the country to charge all the cars at the same time.
Right. And go on. Sorry, I thought you'd finished.
And also maybe one more thing is this remote support, that all the chargers that we sell, we want to sell with remote support so that whenever there is an issue, any question by the customer, that they can contact us and we can give them help immediately over the air. And this is really the biggest game changer, I think, in the electrification industry, which has ever happened, that when you sell a system, I don't know, maybe a simpler or more complex system, that you're able to help the customer remotely and you don't have to go to the site to make any adjustments. So those were examples. I don't know, maybe a longer answer, but that kind of viewpoints are quite important, at least from our point of view.
No, I think they're essential. And the point about communication and backup, I mean, can I sort of press you a little bit on that? Are you saying then that that's like 24/7? Because obviously, you know, people will charge their car at all sorts of times. I guess in, you know, a lot of workplaces, maybe it's a facility that operates shifts. Mm. So, you know, it's a, like, I don't know, a data center or something that's working 24/7. So are you saying that you can offer round-the-clock support, you know, over-the-air updates, over-the-air support, and personal support on the end of a phone? Is that what you're saying?
We are not doing that. And actually, our role as a company is that we are basically a system supplier. So there are other parties in the value chain. So we have the electrical installers, of course, who are our customers who are doing the installation. And then I think the key question is, who will be the back end, the software system provider, and who will be operating the system? So we are not offering 24/7 support from our side. We are offering it during working hours. But if there would be a case where the customer insists on that they must have a 24/7 solution, then the advantage of the solutions that we have is that we are selling OCPP compliant charging solutions, which means that it's possible and quite easy to connect the stations to different charging management software providers or operators. I think you call them CPOs.
Yes, charge point operators.
So you can choose a CPO, who is able to offer 24/7 support if that is what the customer needs. Of course, you can also offer a solution where you kind of limit the risk of having all the chargers offline, that you can also plan systems so that they are more resilient. And that can also be a way to resolve this kind of issue. Like you said, that someone is 2 o'clock in the night in by the data center and he insists on that he necessarily must have some electricity. Then that might be one way to reduce the risk, that is that you plan the system so that there are different clusters and that if one is down, then you have still some others which are working.
Right. Right. Now, Nicholas, given you've got all these different stakeholders then, planning, design, installation, and a question that's come in from, I'll pick them in order they've come in, Mandy Davis. For businesses starting out with EV charging, so if people are listening now, that's what they're doing, where can they, you know, where do they go to find the information? Is it the utility company or should they go directly to their EV manufacturer? You know, are we at a place where there's a kind of one-stop shop? Because what I wouldn't want to be either as just driving an EV or, you know, company owners going to this company, then that company, then someone else, and they say, oh, you need to talk to that person. how do we make this simple? How do we make it, you know, as easy as possible?
Yeah. Well, how we see it, there are the market has already different kind of companies with different kind of value propositions. And there are companies who are offering turnkey solutions. It's like a one-stop shopping solution. At Otto are not able to offer that because we are a system supplier. So what happens is that if end customer is contacting us, we will basically refer them to one of our to some installer that we know well, who we can trust that will, you know, manage or will make the offer to the end customer.
Hmm.
But it really depends on the use case, because we also see that there are a lot of customers who already have a local electrical installer, and they prefer that this installer who already knows the site and the building will make the installation of the EV charging solution. And I would say that our mission on the market is to make EV charging accessible to all electrical installers on the market. And we are not limiting ourselves to a limited amount of installers. And that just means that we have to be very supportive, and we have to offer a very good service to the market, to all electrical installers who want to get into the business. So, and sometimes it might be that there is a big company who has their own service organization, and they want to do all the planning and everything. And at their own consideration, they might hire an installer who is doing it locally, but they are very much involved in the case themselves with us. So actually, I gave you several different models. So it depends really on the company and what they want to have, and whether you want to have a one-stop shopping with a completely new partner that they don't necessarily know from before, or if they want to do it locally together with their already existing electrical installers, for instance.
Mm.
It's a good question.
Now, listen, we've got a question from Jose Maria. Yeah, we've got Jose Maria Jimenez in Mexico City, where I imagine it doesn't snow very often and rarely gets frosty cold. But okay, so he's kind of got two questions, which is fine. You've kind of sort of answered a bit of this anyway in what you just told us. But so Jose Maria is asking, do you have a particular preference for a charger brand? And if you do, why? And also the software you're using for monitoring, Is it your own in-house development, or are you using existing software? So sort of a couple of questions there, to be honest.
So we are very much focusing on the collaboration with EVBox at the moment. And that means that we are selling EVBox OCPP chargers on the Finnish market. And we are also offering the first line support on the EVBox Everon software management platform, which they are providing. And the reason, basically how we consider the situation some 2.5 years ago was that how we see that the development will go is that because of this very rapid growth in EVs globally, it will also mean that there is a very rapid growth in the EV charging stations. And at the moment, what we can see is that there is a huge amount of EV charging hardware manufacturers. And we believe that the best bet for us would be to partner up with some international or global manufacturer for whom the Finnish market is not so big that they would like to establish an own sales organization, for instance.
Sure.
So what we then did was, and we found each other, what we managed to do was that we came into an agreement with EVBox, and our aim and mission is to really take care of the market so well that they are very fine with us doing that job for them, and that they can focus on some bigger markets. So that's kind of the strategy. And what we believe is that when these markets are picking up, the amount of suppliers will at some point reduce very drastically, and only the big ones will remain on the market.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting over the next few years, because obviously in relative terms, globally, the electric vehicle, you know, revolution's only just begun. In some countries, it's very accelerated, but overall, it's still only starting. So, it's going to be intriguing to see how it all rolls out. A couple of other questions coming in. So, Ilya is asking, I like this one. How do you think the installation of battery energy storage systems can solve the problem of lack of grid capacity for an ultra-fast charging station? So I'm sure you get the gist of that. And I think particularly in challenging locations, some of the questions that we asked earlier, is the reality, commercial reality, you know, the cost of doing that, is that really going to happen? Are you seeing that happening at the moment of, you know, energy storage so that you're not reliant on plugging into the live grid to charge up vehicles, particularly, you know, ultra-fast charging? Any thoughts on that, Nicholas?
Yeah. So as I explained before, we have a relatively strong grid in Finland. So I think on a global scale, Finland will not be among the first very early adapters of energy storage to support ultra-fast charging. But we have seen that there are already some cases in Finland, and energy storage systems are gradually entering the market in different applications as such. And we are also involved in that business, so we have the preparedness to also offer energy storage solutions. But maybe we are a little bit in the same situation as with EV charging, that we are not quite sure whether the boom is yet here, and we are still in a, let's say, more like a pilot stage there, that we don't know exactly which year it will be the year of the ESS solutions on the market. But for sure, they will support the ultra-fast charging networks when they grow. And at some point, you might have problems with the grid capacity anyway, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, it's fascinating to try and predict what's going to happen between all of these batteries and electric vehicles, which theoretically could become part of the energy storage grid if they can bi-directionally charge. How then and where we find energy storage both to soak up, if you like, the renewable energy growth so it doesn't get wasted, and then connect that, as Ilya suggests, to ultra-fast charging stations. My own view, if I can volunteer that, in terms of how fast does this happen now, well, I think we're getting increased competition in the market, increased choice. The Chinese proposition now of electric vehicles is coming into Europe. That's going to be very significant. We all know that the legislation now, certainly 2035 European ban on combustion engine manufacture for European sold vehicles, it is going to happen. So all of this is and that's not far away. It sounds a long way off, 2035, but it's not. So there is absolute momentum in my mind now around where this is going. The public awareness of electric vehicles and the proposition is strong. And whilst I know that the cost of EVs is still prohibitive for the majority of people, there's no denying that. I would imagine, and forgive me if I'm making an assumption, that relatively speaking, Finland isn't a poor country. It's a relatively wealthy country, as are most of the Nordics, in truth. So that partly helps a more rapid adoption of EVs. Would it be fair to say that? I'm not saying you're all rich, Nicholas, but you know, it's not a you're not a poor country, are you?
Yeah. Well, I have been thinking about that quite a lot recently, and I think you know, I mean, if you compare here again, Norway is, you know, 5 or 10 years ahead of Finland. But the reason for that is that they have been subsidizing it so much.
Yeah,
I mean, imagine that you don't take even VAT on the cars, so that's very extreme.
It's a no-brainer. That's what it's been.
Yeah,
in Norway.
Exactly. I think the Finnish government has been more pragmatic, that they don't see the necessity to be the first ones, you know, and pay ridiculous sums for that. But what is now happening definitely in Finland is that the offering is very interesting now on the EVs, because it has grown a lot. There's much more brands to choose from and different types of cars, and that's a big plus. And then another very important fact which is supporting growth in Finland is that electricity is relatively cheap in Finland, and that means that you get substantial savings in moving your car by electricity compared to diesel or petrol. So there is like a good case that you can maybe pay, you know, 10,000 euros more for the EV, and you will end up at the zero level because if you drive a lot, because electricity is so cheap. So again, compared to Central Europe and many other parts of the world, we still have quite good rates on the energy itself, and that is kind of pushing the development a lot forward. We do have some small governmental subsidies, but they are quite reasonable compared to many other markets.
Right. So just remind me, I should know, I should have researched this, so apologies. The makeup of your electricity grid, is it mainly hydro, or where has the energy come from? It's not solar, is it, I guess? What is it?
Yeah, we are moving quite fast towards renewables. And so we have nuclear power. We have one of the ten most expensive nuclear power plants in Finland under construction since more than 10 years ago. It's a little bit delayed, but now they seem to get it on hold, which is a little bit funny.
They're all delayed, Nicholas.
We do have also hydro, but not in the same extent as in Sweden and Norway. And we use like biomass, you know, it's kind of related to forest industry and so on. But coal is, we have had coal before, but it's very low. The amounts are very low now. And there is a very heavy investment wave going on in wind power at the moment. And solar is also growing very rapidly at the moment. But I think wind energy will be one of the main sources of energy in the future in Finland, for sure. So renewables.
Yeah, sure. I must ask another question. When it comes to installers, what sort of common mistakes or you know, misconceptions have you noticed that they have, and how do we avoid those? Because obviously somebody's got to come and install the kit. What sort of things have people, you know, got wrong or can you learn from? Anything you can share with us on that, please?
Well, I guess normally everything goes really well, but it happens still every now and then that an installer calls us and they tell us, we have just installed this, you know, charger. And then they start to go through the details. And then we both realize together with the installer that he has been working with some other manufacturer's product, which has a different architecture. And they have not, you know, they have just by default thought that, since that charger works in a certain way, he will do the same with this one. And that is a mistake, of course. So my recommendation is always to an installer that it would be wise to focus on a few makes or brands and really learn in advance to understand the architecture, how different technical details have been resolved. So like a typical example is maybe that you have one power cable into a double station, and then you say that it's a 22 kilowatt station. So what happens if there are two cars connected? Does it share 22 kilowatts, or is there 2 times 22 kilowatts, or is it fixed 2 times 11 kilowatts? These kind of things are quite typical.
Yeah.
And then I think the most classic kind of challenge is that if we have, for instance, a charging station cluster with several chargers, then you have to understand technically how do these chargers communicate with each other. And typically, like we are, for instance, offering completely wireless solutions, or then another alternative is that we communicate, for instance, via a Modbus twisted pair cable. And you basically have to have control on this while you do the installation. Otherwise, you will have to probably dig up the ground afterwards, and that's not very fun. We are trying to kind of...
Especially as you say, in the winter.
Exactly. Yeah. we are trying to be quite proactive in this matter. So we have built an own set of instructions that when we send order confirmation, we add, you know, some quick start guides, you know, read through these, you know, documents at least before you do anything, you know, to kind of direct the customers. And we have also created some video material, you know, that we can distribute to our customers for them to have a look on. And of course, whenever they call us and they want to have our support, we will offer it over phone or over Teams or whatever. But at the end, I think it's on the responsibility of the installer to find out how the system is designed and how does it work before they start the installation.
Yeah, I guess that would help. Now, you mentioned 22 kilowatts charging. Does that mean that, you know, general domestic environment, et cetera, has three phase? Is three phase common in Finland?
Absolutely. Everything is three phase. So we have more or less discontinued completely selling one phase charging solutions.
Right.
Because three phase is available everywhere. And once you have that three phase available, you know, the cost saving is so small, so marginal, if you just use one phase for the charging. So it doesn't make sense. So it's again a question of being future proof. So you maybe don't need the three phase now, but if you have like a plug-in hybrid, for instance, which has only a one phase charger, but probably the next car that you buy has a three phase charger. So I think the market has already accepted also that it doesn't make sense to use one phase chargers on the market.
Well, you know, you're in a great position because that's not the case everywhere in the world, for sure. Not the case in the UK, absolutely. And, you know, being in a position with new installations and when people get, you know, a new job done on the home, they can look at doing that. Obviously, there's a cost involved. But being able to charge at 22 kilowatts at home, oh, wow, I'm so envious of that. You know, the best I can – I mean, it's amazing because the best I can charge, you know, is 7 kilowatts, which is fine over overnight. But if you're in between, you know, going in and out of the house and you've come back and you do need to charge up, you know, obviously the time factor kicks in. Look, you might have to endure the long cold winters in Finland, but you can charge your EVs quickly. So I don't have any sympathy for you anymore now with the winter.
But having said that, I would say that in domestic applications, the most common installation is 11 kilowatts in a one family house, and also in the condominiums, 11 kilowatts, three times 16 amperes. And then when you go to an office building, you might want to have the 22 kilowatts also to serve those plug-in hybrids with one phase 32 amp, 7.4 kilowatt charger. But I maybe would still like to exchange a few words about the current, because we are every now and then contacted by, let's say, condominium, and they say that they want to have 10 times, 11 kilowatts, and they want to have, them all accessible at full power all the time. So you have to kind of have a very big grid connection and, a lot of power. And this doesn't make sense. So we don't recommend anyone to do that. So what we have learned in Finland is that one of the universities have made a study on what is the amount of current that you should use in dimensioning in a condominium. And they have studied, how people are coming and going from the building and, what is the typical occupancy rate on the parking place and how many kilometers do you drive per day. And they came to the conclusion that a good dimensioning between 2 and 3 kilowatts per parking space. And you might have the 11 kilowatt chargers, but you have still dynamic load balancing and you balance the load between the chargers. And if you have 10 chargers, you can maybe, 30 kilowatts is enough for those 10 chargers, considering the behavior of people in the condominiums. So you do save, a lot of cabling, and even, you don't have to expand your grid connection with this kind of understanding of the actual need that people have. So your one phase 7.4 is not that bad, I think, in a domestic environment as such.
No. I mean, that's what I've only ever been used to. And as you say, it's perfect, fine. And I think you raise a very good point there, Nicholas, in that some of the technology, smart charging technology, analytics, the whole thing around how do we make this the most efficient process, that we shouldn't just go for the kind of, very simple and basic stuff, because the costs involved can be considerable. And a lot of the time, it's just not needed. It is about, now learning. And as we scale up the EV proposition so that it becomes a majority of vehicles on the road are EV, not the minority, we've kind of got to get this efficiency paradigm correct, as best we can. And we've got the technology to do that now. We do indeed. So listen, believe it or not, we've almost gone through our entire hour. It's quite extraordinary how quickly it goes. You kind of answered I was going to have a final question, which was really about, how do you ensure people get the best out of the app that comes with the charger to maximize all the capability of the charger, particularly in this smart charging arena, charge at the best time for the grid and for the, end user in terms of cost and all these other things. But you've sort of kind of answered that. But just to finish off, if you gave me, say, 2 or 3 very quick key factors that are about, getting reliable charging, optimal performance, no matter what the circumstances, could you quickly give us a very quick flavor of that? And then we're wrapped up.
Yeah, I think at the end, this is really a question of service as a whole, that you have to find partners who are committed to give a good service. And naturally, you need to have a good platform from where to start. So a good technical solution, which is reliable and proven, of course, that you maybe have some good references on that, and that the physical product is that you can service it, that you can exchange maybe some parts during the life cycle of the product. But then I think when it comes to the end customer and how, considering what is a solution which they will be happy with, I think they will be very happy with it if they have a good contractor who will give good service and a good operator who will help them in case there are any kind of issues. And that's kind of the commitment that we have given to our customers and to the market, that we will help the customer all the way to the end and make sure that everything is working. And if there are any issues, we will resolve them. And in that sense, I think that's a good way to ensure that it will be a good solution, which will have a long life cycle as well.
Well, Nicholas, it certainly sounds good to me. So on that note, very positive note, looking after people, holding their hands, taking it all the way through. Yeah. I knew nothing about your company before this, you know, U2. I'm not disappointed that you weren't the rock band that I thought you were at the beginning. That's all fine, because clearly you're doing a great job up there in Finland and beyond. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you
for answering all the questions, and indeed for our audience to pitching the questions at you. This will be a podcast. If you're listening on the podcast and weren't watching the live show, where were you? We'll forgive you though. But for now, Nicholas, thank you for your time. Good luck with everything that you're doing, this wealth of experience from over 100 years, but now you're definitely at it in the electric vehicle revolution. So welcome and good luck, and thank you for your time, and goodbye everybody.
Thank you, Roger, and nice to meet you.